श्रुत्वा गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्तिभिः सीदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ॐ नमः शिवाय गुरवे सच्चिदानन्दमूर्तये निष्प्रपञ्चाय शान्ताय श्रीशिवानन्दाय ते नमः श्रीविष्णुदेवानन्दाय ते नमः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. So, good evening. Thank you all to come and join us today. This is a very special thing to have this kind of course because, first of all, taking time for things like this in our busy schedules, you know, we're very busy, everybody's busy, we don't have time for many things like this to begin with, and have opportunity to study something like this also is a very rare thing as well. So in that way, we're very fortunate to be able to, both to have time, interest, and opportunity for something like this. Literally, it really is something like this. So, very, very fortunate. Please come. So, she was asking, one person asking my name, so I write down here, like this, how they know me in our yoga circles. Gajananam. Many of you know me, some not. Swami Vishnavanandaji is my teacher. And then I've been learning Vedanta in Swami Dayananda school. Swami Dayananda is one of the best known Vedanta masters in our day and age. He passed away 1 year ago, actually, and one of his disciples teaches in Milpitas. So I've been going for classes there a few years now, and I'll discuss about how Vedanta study and everything is in this study. So, in this course, this is going to be a very nice introductory course. What happens is this text Tattva Bodha, which I will introduce more, but Tattva Bodha is, in many Vedanta schools, is the text which is the first studied as an introduction, because it's very gives a very good skeleton. You know, like when I took a little walk before I came here, then they're renovating a house, right? So they tear everything out, they gut it. There's just the main walls and stuff. So it gives this main outline for Vedanta teaching. Very, very nice structure, and also gives the nomenclature. The nomenclature, very important to know, because if we study this, and then you study something more, that is a base. It's kind of like, you learn ABC, and then you start learning more with it. So in this way, both is giving a structure of Vedanta philosophy, as well as giving the main, the terminology. Very helpful. And of course, in the class then, this is bare bones. You get some more from teaching the class. More gives, some more meat, some more fat on the bones, okay? I don't have so much fat, but I'll add a little bit to it, okay? Like this. So in this way. What we'll do is, time is a bit constrained for all this, for long introductions, so I'll ask each person, please just tell us your name. And just 1-2 sentences, what made you interested to come. Long biography, we can discuss another time, but we're limited time. And I'll limit it just to people here, because just technologically starts getting complicated, anybody not here. Only 2 people not here today, but like this, okay? So sorry for those people not here, not including you in that, okay? So we start from this side.
My name is Isabel, and I got interested in this class from reading the Swami Vivekananda's Jnana Yoga.
Oh, very good. Excellent. Good. And your name?
My name is Satish. I got interested because I took Miracles of Minds class, and I know that there's more to body and mind, right? Mm-hmm. What is the true self? So.
Okay. Very nice. And?
My name is Hitomi. I took DTC class in this November.
Yeah.
And so I want more learn.
Excellent. Very well, welcome. And your name?
My name is Vasini. I've also done my DTC in India.
Okay.
It's just so many reasons why I'm here.
Uh-huh. Okay. Excellent.
Karma.
My name is Lalita. I did my TTC in Grass Valley also in 2016. And then right after the TTC, they had offered the Viveka Chudamani Vedanta course. Mm-hmm. So I stayed for that and then got a little bit of a taste for studying Vedanta and have been wanting to study it ever since.
Okay, very good, very good. And your name is?
My name is Silvina.
Silvina. And you came why?
I came because I just arrived. I received the information and I'm interested to take the two classes.
Okay, excellent. Well, welcome.
My name is Doug. I came here because Gajananam is, and I work together, and I've been very lucky to be able to have him lead some yoga and mindfulness courses at our workplace, and I'm trying to calm down my monkey mind.
You see, he's already knows the mind. It's a monkey mind, so you've learned.
Books in Hinduism, Vedanta special. But this was interesting because introduction more formal and guided,
sure.
And obviously knowledge is key. Thank you.
Very good.
I'm Swami Shivashankari Ananda, the director of the center, and I really enjoyed the Vedanta in ATTC, the Advanced Teacher Training Course, and it's always great to dive into it.
Very good. So I'm very happy that all of you are here for all this. So in any case, the way we are going to study this is like this. The traditionally Vedanta, the way it's studied, to really get deep into any subject matter, is you have to study for an extended period in a structured manner. And, you know, I've lived in our Shivananda centers in New York for 7 years in the 90s. So we studied to some extent, and also afterwards in different ways, like people said they read or this, or different courses. But then really to get into really, in Vedanta schools, they say you have to study systematically for an extended period. And having done that for some years, I see the benefit that it really makes a difference, both the systematic, with somebody who's done for a long time, who has experience with it, and where it's also... it's step by step that way as well, because for any material, and in this included, it makes a very big difference. So this is how this is usually studied. So if we to study this whole thing very thoroughly, it'll take a lot more than 6 weeks to do that. Just meeting six times, we'll give an overview of this in this time that we're here together. And as long as there's interest, we can keep studying deeper. That's not a problem. If you're interested, I'm interested to do it. Okay? If it's something that you like to do, not a problem. So we'll do that. So the way the classes usually work also is you listen, I'll explain everything. Unless there's something really not clear, as I say, usually it'll be repeated in this, and no worries. At the end, usually it'll be some time for questions. In the middle, it's good just to hear the subject matter, because it'll be explained very thoroughly like this. One fellow, Mahakanta here, will try one more time to connect. If he gets disconnected, then we'll just leave it be. Because he's supposed to be on here, and he's a very serious student, but this one time he wasn't able to be available like this. He's on a bus, so I said, can you just try with the phone? I said, okay, I'll try, so we'll see. I think we're connected with him now. So in any case, So the base of where Vedanta comes from, why is this studied? It's like this. This is the why we're here. Why this? Why anything? So first of all, what happens is one of the things we're always looking for, everybody's looking for, running around, busy, you know, all, how many? 7 billion? I've encountered recently. How many of us here? How many of us around here running around day and night? for a few things, but the bottom line is we want to be happy, we want to be content. We want to be happy. That's what we want, right? That's the bottom line. Very simple. You know, why do people move from Eastern countries to U.S.? Why people go from U.S. to Eastern countries? Why people get married? Why they get divorced? Right? Why? For all these things, people want to be happy. That's the bottom line. We just want that. It's simple, basic thing. That's human nature that we want this. Not just human nature, living beings. Your animals, your plants too. They want to be happy, right? That's what they want. Now, what happens is, how much happiness do you want? The question. Nobody says, I want to be a little bit happy. Give me happiness 10 minutes a day, then. You know. If somebody's really suffering, let's say, give me a little bit and at least this. Okay. But in general, we just want to really be happy. That's what we want. But the question is, when we want to get anything, what is the best way to do it? What is the smart way to do it? And the way we usually go about doing it is not the smartest way. I'll give you an example that's given for this, is that I want to have, I want to have Hawaii Namaste, please come, please join us. So what happens is, I want to have hot water, right? I want to have something hot. So I tell, Lalita is very nice. She said, can I fill your water like this? So I said, yeah, please put hot water in. So we'll be sitting here talking for half hour, an hour, right? Then I'll drink some water. I'll say, hey, it's not hot. I thought I asked, could you give me hot water? For my throat, I'm talking a lot. It's better than this. That it's good. That she'll say, I brought hot water. Then why is it not hot now? Why not? It went away. It went away. Because the water's nature is not heat, right? The water's nature isn't heat. So what happens is, if you heat it up, after some time, it's going to cool down. You can't do anything about that. If I have fire, on the other hand, it's going to be hot. Because its nature is heat. So what happens is, if I want happiness, and I want total, I want to have perfect happiness, and I just want it to be there, then if I'm trying to get it from external circumstances, then it's just like trying to have the water here be hot all the time. Exactly the same thing, because the circumstance is something temporary. The circumstance is going to change, right? What happens is I do something, I get something, and I know that's making me happy. Now, what's going to happen is, first of all, after some time, that thing is going to change, right? Everything in the world will change, so that changes. So then, having that give me the happiness is, And also, even though I want to get, once I get it, how much of the time it really makes me happy? It makes me a little bit, but totally fulfilled? Oh, rare cases, right? Another thing that happens is my mind changes too, right? You move somewhere because you'll be happy. You get a job, oh, I love this, I'll be happy in this. After some time, you don't like it anymore, the place is the same. The thing is the same. Your mind changed. So what happens, all these things, I'm trying to get happiness, I'm looking for unconditional happiness in a conditional place. So it's illogical, right? How many times have we tried? How many times have we failed? How many billions of people, 7 billion people are trying? And of those, probably, maybe not on one hand, but within just a few hands, you can count those that have, that are finding not by that, very small percentage. So we say we're logical beings, but not too loud, some conditioning isn't working too well there. So this is the problem. Now what happens, Vedanta says, yes, it is, the thing is this, getting conditional happiness won't do it. The only way is unconditional. And Vedanta studies how to get that unconditional happiness. What happens though, how to get the unconditional happiness isn't totally correct. Because anything you get means that at some time it will go. It's nothing can, everything that comes is going to go. So some things come, you want them to stay, they go away very quickly, right? Some things come, you want them to go away and they stay for a long time. But they'll go away eventually too. That nothing will stay like that for good, like this. So what happens, things that come and go, you won't find it there because that is conditional. So Vedanta's saying, it is there, but the thing, you're just looking in the wrong way. This is what happens. This is the one of the core things Vedanta's saying. It's saying it's your nature. It's your nature, but the thing is, you're not looking for it in the smart way. We're not knowing how to do it. So that's one of the cruxes in Vedanta. That's really what it's for in the end. And also for us to understand, the main thing is a misunderstanding. Because one thing is that we take things as they appear to be, but not as they really are. And what happens then is whatever something appears to be isn't really what it is. It just seems to be. So same with myself, because I think I'm this limited person struggling and everything, and that's one aspect. But somebody who's trying to be happy. There's actually one thing they say about it, this. People are trying to be happy. What does as long as I'm trying to be happy, that means that I'm not happy. If you're trying to be happy, it won't work. So if you drop the trying, drop this, then it's a different story. But we know things aren't what they appear to be, right? Let's say I come here. It's, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Say, this thing here, it's not solid. It's really mostly empty space. You'll say, you're crazy, right? What do you mean by that? But now somebody says it. Oh, yeah, science said so. Yeah, I know, right? So things are never exactly what they appear to be. Now, what happens is this. In Vedanta philosophy, then, philosophy isn't exactly the best term for now. We'll use that as we go on. We can see a system to cut away the appearances like this. Is three things that are mainly analyzed in this, in Vedanta. One thing is that we analyze is the world, right? To understand what the world is, because we have some preconceived ideas about things, how they appear to be. So we have to understand that. That's one thing. Another thing that's analyzed is God. Where does the world come from? There must be something beyond this world. Now the scientists, they slowly come on board. They're a little bit slow, but they're getting faster. Like they're saying, the Big Bang is not just an explosion or this, it's some intelligent thing in there. Some intelligence there, because too orderly. So there's some meaning, there's something there that's making it orderly, like this. Okay, so that also has to be studied, second thing. Third thing is myself, the individual. These three things, jiva, jagat, ishvara, jiva, individual, jagat, the universe, ishvara, the God. Use God for now, later we can discuss how everything, because now what happens is with God and universe, we have some preconceived ideas, but, of world we're pretty flexible, especially now with science and this. Of God, just the idea there's some power and it's beyond this, there's some idea which, unless I have I could have a very stiff idea, but we do have some flexible idea because it's an open-ended thing, infinite. So idea isn't too bad. The problem, the main crux of the problem, idea of myself. I come with the conclusion on this individual person, this limited body mind, born on this date, all these things. I come with all those ideas, with this DNA, right? With this gender, with this age, with this. I come with that, and I come to a conclusion that's how it is. To break that is much more difficult because of the strong conditioning. So what happens, actually, all three are studied in Vedanta. The individual is the most important, hardest one to study like this. But that's the most important one. That's what I'm caught in all the time also, like this. So these are the three main things we'll be studying. Now, Vedanta philosophy, based on what happens is we have the Vedas. The Vedas have they're the most ancient scriptures or scripts, I think, that are known to mankind. I could be wrong again. Somebody might know better, that's fine. But from religious philosophical perspective, the oldest known. And the Vedas are mostly broken into two parts. One part is called Karma Kanda. Karma Kanda is the first part. And the second part is called Jnana Kanda. So Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, two parts. when we get into some important points, this, some of them I will write down, but as introduction, I'm not going to start for each thing to write down and everything. So the first part is more preparation, like this. The second part, Vedanta part, is the jnana kanda. This is the jnana knowledge. Why does knowledge have a K before it? Because it comes from jna, so they couldn't just put a, you know, an N or something, so they had to put something similar. You see? The more you study Sanskrit, the more you see how so much of the English, you know, comes from it like this. Because it's one of the great, you know, the oldest known that is Indo-European language known today, and English is the youngest, maybe youngest. So in any case, so what happens then is that the Vedanta means the latter part of Vedas, end of Vedas. So in the Vedas, it's the latter part. 95-99% is the karma kanda, a very small portion. Because action, karma, action, activity, you can do so many, so varied, so many things. And mostly from our perspective, spiritual seekers, there's activity, spiritual activity is done in order for me to get something. I want to get something. But from a spiritual seeker, for purification is what it's important for. Like yoga, you can do for health, or you can do it for, which is a byproduct from the spiritual aspirant, so my mind is more quiet, I can meditate better, like this. So many and varied, but knowledge is very simple, very little, like this, but it's subtler. So what happens then is the Upanishads are that latter part of the Vedas, where original teachings are. So that's where all the teachings of Vedanta are there. But a lot of it is very terse. You'll never just study Upanishad directly. You'll study with commentary of, you know, somebody known that they know how to do it properly. Usually Adi Guru Shankara, this is a Shankaracharya. This is most of what we study will be from that, from what he wrote, or certain other texts that are accepted in it. Because just like if you want to study physics, you're going to take what, you know, Einstein, Hawking, some of the top ones wrote, because that, you know, is authoritative. Why waste your time on some other things that aren't known to be? So these, anything by Shankara is known, Advaita Vedanta, to be totally authoritative, no question about like this. So his commentaries. And then other than that, before studying Upanishads, usually some other things are studied, which will be different prakaranas. Prakarana is a treatise which takes certain point of it, certain aspect, and elaborates on it. Like one of them is the Drik Drishya Viveka, is a very good one, that very good introductory one, very, very good one to study, that you learn a lot. And that takes just one aspect. I'm the witness in consciousness, everything else is, you know, I'm the witness, the rest is what I'm, is not me, it's object, I'm subject. Like this, so it elaborates on that. So Tattva Bodh, as we said, it gives a very good general introduction. And some people say Adi Shankara wrote it. Some people say not. Surely it follows his line of thinking, anybody that knows how he would teach. And what happens, though, is nowadays, somebody writes one small poem, you know, first time, two lines, name is signed, right? Like this. Somebody makes one funny painting, they sign their name. So this is how we do it now. But in both in older times and also in this tradition, you know, it wouldn't be. They wouldn't sign the name. So that's why they'll say Shankara wrote it or not, because, no, he didn't say it, just wrote because it's needed, right? That's it. It's not that, okay. So in the Upanishads, some are known, but most of it, the Rishi, the seer, the rope, you know, that specific Upanishad, not, and it's not important. Because these things are timeless. So why timeless? So why? What's the importance in that? Like this. But in any case, so that's one side thing. So this is one of the prakaranas, a very very good one to start with, as we said. Now what happens also when we said with the karma kanda and jnana kanda, one big difference is, for certain types of knowledge, once you know, then it has to be followed by activity. Like you come to the yoga center, and you say, I want to learn yoga, how do I do it? You'll come to the class and they'll say, well, you can, you know, to balance your energies, okay, breathe like this, right? You'll go and you'll say, really, yeah, nice balance, balances your energies nicely, calms your mind nicely. Oh, very nice, okay. So you go, come back 1 week later. You know, my mind isn't any calmer, any this. You know, we taught you the exercise. Yeah, I know how to do it. Did you try it all at home? No, I didn't try. Like this. Or you'll come and you'll say, I want to learn how to cook this thing. You'll come, they have dosa day or sometimes, right? Oh, how do you cook? And they'll learn, I know how to cook dosa now. You go, you don't do it. You want to eat dosa at home, right? You don't do it. So you know. So one type of knowledge, you know, and then you have to follow with action or it's not going to, it won't do anything, right? Like this. That's one type of knowledge. Second type of knowledge, knowing is all you need. Once you know, that's it. Nothing, no action needed. So one good example for that will be that I'm going to say, okay, I want to read you one verse from here. And I'm going to say, you know that I have a conspiracy theory that since the last few years, they've been taking all this small text and making it blurry. I don't know how that happened. Suddenly they took them and they started smearing on just the last few years. So that's why I tricked them and I got glasses, but I can't find my glasses, so I can't read it for you. And then what'll happen is, you know, somebody else tell me, the glasses, you have your glasses, you didn't lose them, they're right around your neck, right? The moment they say that, do I need any action to find my glasses? No action needed. I know. Once I know they're there, done. So this is second type of knowledge. So Vedanta philosophy is that type. It's not that I have to do an action. But what happens, though, is it is something subtle. And so meaning that preparation is very important. A nice example is given for it is if there's going to be a wedding, right? Not a wedding that people go to City Hall and, but, you know, where they do the whole big celebration and everything. So if they're going to do that, how much time and energy goes for the preparation and everything? And how much time is the wedding itself? Right? Months, maybe they're preparing. 2 hours, 3 hours, finished. You know, even if it's a longer thing, like it's a few days someplace of this, right? In India, in many places, a week, but now they make it shorter, 2 days, 1 day, a half day, because people are busy nowadays, right? Very few people do it for a week. My wife was there one wedding. It was 2 days they had some things, and then another one just the 1 day or something now, because it's gotten, you know, shorter like that. But in any case, the preparation time in this is so much more elaborate. So with this too, that's why the preparation is very, very important. So it's not that if we're not totally prepared, okay, let's put this aside, not study, but to understand what is the main goal, what is really the bottom line, what spirituality is really getting to. And all the rest is a good preparation for this. This is the important thing. So how this works, I'll explain. This is an important point. This one is a very important point. And this is something, and actually, today has been introduction. As we go along, it is not a bad idea to take notes. First time when I went to Vedanta class where I go, then what happens is I came, and I notice everybody else is taking notes at end, so I just borrowed a page, and this, and ever since then, it's very useful because I'm studying and I go back and learn more and more because it's something I'm learning. So that's why, you know, having notebook something, you take notes of this. Right here, what happens, I study with my teacher, Vijay Kapoorji, very, very good teacher. He's been studying 40 years from Swami Dayananji. He used to give a 3-year course. He stayed residential in the ashram. He did that in the 70s, since then he's studying like this. And so this, then one of the most senior disciples, Swami Dayananji, after I studied this with the teacher, because these things should be studied like this. If you study from a book or just a recording, it's not the same. Literally, take my word for it, I've done both ways. Now I know. So like this. So then, on top of that, I studied Swami Paramarthanandaji, one of the most brilliant disciples of Swami Dayananda, and then I took notes, and that helps me now with very orderly, also for the teaching, like this. So in any case, so what happens is, with the for why, what is the problem to begin with? When we analyze my problem, where does it come from? Then there are three reasons, three things that are not letting me know that the happiness is within me. Three things. And that's why we have the spiritual practices for these. It's not just not yoga for being healthy or something like this. That's, again, byproduct. So there are three issues that we have with it. Oop, there's the erase. You see, you just have to erase yourself. Erase the ideas about myself. Is that what happens? So one of them, we have three things. One is called mala. Mala is impurity. So I have impurities in my mind, right? I have biases, right? I'm not a biased person, right? I don't have any biases like this. I have my biases. I have my likes and dislikes. I like this, but I don't like this, right? I'll tell you an interesting, funny thing. They come in subtly and get us too. When I was in Japan first time, so I was there, I was in then Machiko-san. She lived in Nagoya then, before she moved away from there, many yoga classes, things there. So she had invited me, because she was my yoga student in the 90s in New York, so she invited me. She was director of our center in Tokyo there for some years. So she invited me to come there. So after being in many places in Japan and going around, then what happened is everywhere they give you green tea, right? Which is fine. But I'm not used to green tea. And I'm used to having an Indian wife many years. I'm used to having chai in the morning. This, okay. So then when we were staying at our house in Nagoya there, a few other people staying. So I said, hey, in the morning I'll make chai for everybody. Everybody's very happy. Oh, nice. But it was a mixture. It was for them, but it was also for me. My likes and dislikes. I like this, right? That's subtle, small one, but I have my likes, my dislikes, I have my biases, I have all this other stuff in my mind, all this nonsense in my mind. This is a problem, because I want to go and analyze myself, but you're making noise, why are you doing that, right? Why is this not here in time, right? Why is that? So what happens is, because I'm caught up in my likes, dislikes, all these things, it pulls me away from being able to analyze. How am I going to analyze clearly if I'm caught up in nonsense like that? You know, I want to meditate, but I don't like this one. Maybe I should get a different one. You know, this book I like, but you know, maybe there's a different edition a little bit. That's what happens. So that's why all of these, all of the nonsense in my mind, this is a problem. Then it gets in the way. So. And I'll tell you one very good point about it. In the prayer we say at the beginning, Sahana Bhavatu, Ma Vidvishavahai, may we not quarrel with each other. And we're not going to maybe be fighting in this, but I've taken classes for years, and I'll tell you one thing. When you're learning, especially sometimes somebody, they'll explain something, you'll say, oh, no, that's not exactly right, or you don't like how they're saying, or this, that. Just small things like this. You're going to the side instead of focusing, what's the essence, right? I see that in my mind when that happens. I see, hey, I'm getting caught up in the nonsense. That's how am I going to focus on the essence like that? So one problem is mala. That's why we have karma yoga. Karma yoga is for that. Again, today we give a small introduction, and going a lot, we won't go deeply into these. These are good for other classes because of the Vedanta, we don't go as much. If needed, if you want, one time we'll discuss them more deeply, but it's not really discussed much, at least usually in Vedanta, because of preparation. But karma yoga, learning to do the actions, what's needed, doing my duty, doing it 100%, without expecting to have certain thing back, without expecting, like this. In the Bhagavad Gita, it has a lot of points where it explains this very clearly, explains, which is very special about Bhagavad Gita. At the end, if you read, it'll say both Upanishad and Yoga Shastra, teaches yoga and Vedanta, both of them. We're usually focused on one or the other. So yoga, meaning the karma yoga, it teaches like that. I do completely what's needed, and I don't, done. I don't have expectation, this, I'm done with it. One of the classical ways done, the results I offer to the God. It's not my department. Finished. Now I'm at peace. Then I can be at peace. Otherwise, we write on the gravestone, R.I.P., rest in peace. Right? Well, we want to rest in peace then or now. Now I can't rest in peace. I lie down, my mind is disturbed. Because if I say, okay, I surrender everything, offer everything, now body needs to rest, mind needs to rest, I'll sleep like a log. But I don't. So karma yoga is for that, yoga of action. This is specifically designed for this, specifically. Second problem I have is called vikshepa. Vikshepa. This is tossing in the mind. The monkey mind, as Dutt said. So what happens is, anybody who's tried just to sit quiet a little bit, I'm sure everybody here has, the mind likes to jump around, run around, go to all sorts of places like that. This is what happens. Right? Oops, he's got a little chime. Since it just takes a moment, we'll just do that. So what happens then is, it's unstable. And, of course, you know, these things intertwine, obviously, right? They intertwine like that, so they're not just, you can't totally separate, but in general, the mind won't be stable something, and especially something subtle, more difficult, like this. So this also then has to be trained, like this. So for this one, upasana. Upasana is meditation. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, those two things are used for this, for stabilizing. For stabilizing, learning also to focus something subtle. So that's where where those come in for this specific thing. Now, these won't totally solve the problem, but they're the preparation. Because again, when the mind's totally quiet, I'm fine. But the mind won't always be quiet. It'll be maybe more quiet. But even mind is quiet, okay, I feel good, but then it's not quiet, then what? So this doesn't totally solve everything, but they're necessary for the preparation. Third one is avarana. For those who know the Sanskrit transliteration, avarana, but we'll see if many people know how to read the Sanskrit, write in the Sanskrit the other terms in the future, so you can see that too. This one is unclarity. Because I'll show you how it's unclarity. You say, yes, I'm here inside, I'm a conscious being, I'm here. Okay? Which part? What do you mean? Which part? Something inside here, right? Something inside here is conscious. Is it your finger? Well, I feel my finger, you know, but that's not the source of me, you know, because if my hand falls asleep, or God forbid I lose finger, I'm still there, I'm still the same one. So it's somewhere in here, but which one, what is it? I'm not sure, like this. So I have unclarity about myself, right? Who am I in the core? Well, I'm this person, but this person, you know, name you change, this changes, everything. But what's the core? What? I don't know. That's in the end. I don't know. It goes down to I don't know, like this. So there's an unclarity there. This is a... We say veil of illusion, but it's like a veil covering. It's like a veil covering now. It's not covering completely. I'll tell you when it covers completely, in your deep sleep. Because deep sleep, nothingness. You don't remember, only when you wake up you knew you slept deeply. Nothingness. So then it's completely covering. Because when you're in deep sleep, you don't feel I'm an awareful being. I'm a conscious being experiencing a deep sleep. It's more when you wake up, you recollect, oh, I had a deep sleep, right? This is what happens. So what happens then is but in the waking state now, yes, I'm here, I'm aware, but which part of you? Where is it from? What is it? Something there, right? So that's where the uncloud, it's a part, that's why not it's a veil, avarana, veil, but unclarity because it's partially. I can partially tell, but I can't put my finger on it. That's the problem that I have, this lack of clarity. So the Jnana Yoga, Vedanta study for this, that's what this is for. Because the main problem is I'm not clear about myself. If I know who I am, no problem. But I have a mixture, an idea. Since it's a mixture, an idea, what I appear to be identified with. How many of the things I get caught up in that I see was just nonsense? It was incorrect. Somebody's talking, I'm sure they're saying this stuff about me, and then they're not talking about me at all. How much of that holds? How much we're caught up in so much stuff, so it's we don't see things. One of the things that Ibn Dante said is that appearances will never stand inquiry. If you really inquire into something, the appearance won't stand, like science does with showing us that this is, you know, this is solid. I have some emotional problem from something. If I really analyze this, if I really intellectually look at it closely, then also it, you know, at least some of it, it doesn't have as much, catch me as much then, because I, you know, analyze, look at it, and clarify some things about it. So that's where in Vedanta, this is called Vedantic inquiry, to inquire about this, about my true nature, and using these methodologies here. Because what happens, if I were to just try it on my own, it would be very difficult because I have so many ideas. It's kind of like, I want to study physics, I'm just going to study my own and figure this out. Not going to be easy. So that's why, like that, it's much more difficult, less likely without some system that does it like this. So this is very important because these are the things for preparation. That's why we say four paths of yoga. So some are very good. Each one has a very important role, but then this one is the Jnana Yoga, then for real understanding of my true nature, like this. This is what it's specifically for, like that. So this is for preparation, what's needed, and where these paths of yoga, everything fit in. Now, how is Vedanta studied is like this. Also, Vedanta study, this also is done in a very systematic way as well, the very specific system that works very well. If I erase this, okay, people noting this. Yeah. Today's Tuesday, so third day. Actually, here we think of a second day, but where I'm from, it's always it starts on Sunday, because what happens is here, kind of it's part of the week, and where I grew up, it wasn't. Sunday is the first day of the week. So it would be in Hebrew, Sunday is first day, Monday is second day, so third day. So today's third day, so three things, that's like three. If we're doing Wednesday, I'd have to give you four, right? Like this. So in any case, so what happens is the systematic study is done with three different parts to the study, three different aspects which are all very important. The first one is what's called Shravanam. Shravanam, how many people read Sanskrit, just to know? Okay, so I'm not writing in the Sanskrit there, no problem. So, Shravanam is one. This is listening. What we're doing here. This is where you have class like this and listening to the theory in the class it's explained. And this one covers all the theory, all the philosophy, all the points are covered in this. It's not that it's for covering everything. It's not that I need to know anything else or new or this, all covered in Sharavanam to explain the points in this. One thing I found also, which at first I didn't understand, and people that are, you know, that are teaching this that I've heard that they're amazing teachers that teach for, you know, their whole life. They're, you know, must be in their 6 years. They study from when they're young in this. They usually do take like this. They'll take something like this, at least a few verses if it's a few days, or if it's a long course, the whole thing, and always go by that. Because what happens is, if I were to just take, like today I'm just giving a small introduction, but if we were to go into the whole thing, and I just take the steps how I feel like doing in my mind, it's from my mind. Here it's from somebody who, as we said again, who really knows it, and so there's good reasoning for the points and order and everything, so that's why it's followed like this. But in any case, it's listening to, and it's very different. Sitting and reading is very different. It's not live, right? I can, you know, skim over things. I can, after a few paragraphs, I can notice I wasn't there, like this. There won't be points pertinent right here and now. Like if you read Swami Shivananda's books, he's talking directly to you. If you read any books, you know, his books are phenomenal. And it's, you know, what a gift he gave to humanity. But he'll give you examples from a different culture, different time, different this, not right here and now. So it's not that you're hearing directly. It's, this is one thing. And listening is a very different. Hearing is a very different action than other than reading like that. Again, I'm not saying don't read. That's don't take it like that. But for studying this live like this really makes a difference. Very big difference you're hearing, and helps it. It goes in some way like this, and so everything is covered and explained. That's the first step in this, which is where we get all the information like this. Second one is mananam. Manas comes from the same root, from man, to think, and then mind comes from that. So this is to. Mean thinking, but means you churn it in your mind, right? You churn it, churning it in your mind. What happens is this: how the mind is constantly churning things all day, right? You know how scientists have been trying to find ways to harness energy from waves right here in the ocean, right? They haven't found, I know they're trying many things, and I know they haven't been, there hasn't been some big breakthrough, big success. Because imagine they can just get 5% of the energy of the wave, from the waves moving, finished. You know, all of our energy problems done, gone, right? So imagine, my mind, what is it churning all day, right? Imagine you could record and then just play it back. How much... It's just churning and churning and churning all this. Oh, I should do this. Maybe I should eat this. No, I should eat this. Why'd that person say, oh, I'm going to be late. I better do this. Is this good or not? Right? On and on. Imagine just 5% of that is churned for thinking about this, things like this. Just 5%. How valuable it would become like this. So it's utilizing this energy. But that's just one aspect. The main aspect, mananam, is to reflect on, because whatever I think about slowly, slowly occupies my mind more, right? Whatever you work with, that's occupying your mind. Family, you know, your family, it's occupying your mind. So then it will occupy your mind because you're putting time and energy to think about. But the thing with mananam also, it's not just the random thing, but taking the points and churning to understand. And what happens is a point is given, but I still have doubts. Just because a point is given doesn't mean I don't have doubts. So many doubts. You know, we said happiness, you'll never, permanent happiness we're looking for, we'll never get it from circumstances. We don't have total conviction in that. No way. If we had total conviction in that, we'd be totally different. So what happens, I have to see, okay, I have to think about that. I first to understand the point, think of it from different angles. What are my doubts about it? Why do I doubt this? And it's a simple fact. It's a very simple fact, very, very easy. You know, that doesn't take too much logic. So that one I have to churn, and I have to think, what are my doubts? And then I have to learn to clear the doubts. And the doubts are cleared in two ways. One is through, after I think about it and I see what my doubt is, I ask about, which why at the end of each class time for questions, so that helps to churn some of this. And then I have to, but the answer can help, but it won't totally resolve, because whose doubt it is my doubt. I have to be able to resolve it in the end. So in the end, because the knowledge is given, but knowledge just stays intellectual knowledge if it doesn't become mine. You know. So I have to churn and I have to come to my understanding. So, it, you know, it's universal, but then unless I get understanding, it's not going to work. So... then I have to churn and I have to find and I have to pull up the doubts. What happens is when you start with this, I'll tell you how it works, from my experience at least. This one I'll just tell you from my experience. When you start studying, then some doubts and this, some questions, more questions come up on clarity. At the beginning, even what to ask, how to formulate, it's a little hard, but a little bit then you get to. Then, okay, you're in class for some time and you ask questions some of the time at the end of this, and you hear questions that helps it, that you would have asked, and it helps. over time, you see, okay, now what I do, because I go to study Upanishad there regularly, I go, there's some idea from my mind, I wait at least a few weeks, I don't know that, unless it's totally pertinent to exactly what's being subject matter being studied then. Usually, by then, no problem. I don't have to ask anymore because the churning, okay, clears it. Once in a while, yes, it's a good thing to ask. And sometimes I'll ask because I want to see, you know, put light on it, is what I got to correct, or there's some other light or something else on it. But with practice, then you learn to churn and to remove doubts like that too, like this. So this is, so the mananam is not again something new, but it clarifies for you. And first of all, it clarifies why what in me is not getting or you, why what in me is not aligned with this, and then why like this, okay, like that. So again, it's not like a dogma. You have to believe it like this, or you're done, right? But the thing is, I have to turn to, you know, simple truth, and then I'll say why do I not accept? What for? And then like this, okay. Third one is called Nididhyasana. Nididhyasana, nice long word. Nididhyasana. This is meditation, more than meditation, reflection, or this other word, a contemplation, you can say is good. Contemplation. Once in a while, when writing a board, you might find some mistake. I like to tell people I grew up bilingual, so I'm an expert at misspelling in two languages. And now that I've studied some Sanskrit, I can do it in the third probably too. So Vedantic meditation is different than other meditation. Some meditation people think I'm just going to be quiet, present with the breath or with the mantra, or some prayer like this. This is one way that is very commonly used in meditation. In Vedantic meditation, what we do, we take some of the things that we learn and focus on, and we focus on those. We'll get into maybe a little bit in this class, maybe not, because it's a little short. Over time get into, because what happens is when you meditate on a contemplate or something, first you have to understand it, otherwise how are you going to contemplate on it? What's it going to, you know, there's nothing to contemplate because there's not, you don't have information about it. Like, for instance, let's say I meditate on Om. I say Om, 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 but if you studied about Om in Upanishads and this, then you have a lot more, then there's what to focus on, the symbolism, there's so much more to focus on than just the sound. Sound and okay, it's the infinite and light of lights. Then there are methods and what to do, how to think about it. So here, when then you focus on that, on what has been taught, and what happens is it helps in trying to change my viewing from that point. Like the example I gave of one thing, I'm the witness, witnessing awareness. Okay, learn how to sit and be witnessing awareness. I know I'm witnessing awareness. Whatever is within the field of awareness is object, it's not me. So I feel my body. Okay, I observe body. I'm witness. Body's there, I feel it. Okay, so I mean it's not me. Oh, I can't focus, there's some noise. Okay, there's noise. Okay, there's noise, I hear it. Meaning there's object, I'm subject. That's not me, it's something separate, so it has nothing to do with me, like this. So this is kind of one way it could be done. So this is how it's taken, and both it helps to solidify, making it, you know, making me see things from that angle. That's one thing it does. Another thing is I have many, many habits in my mind that are pulling other ways, and this helps to solidify this view instead of these other habits that I have as well. So that's how the Nididhyasana done. That's why, actually, when one time years ago, the person who at the time was the acharya of Chinmaya Mission in San Jose, also very, very, you know, having centers around the world teaching Vedanta and Hindu, their Hindu centers. So he's now Sannyasi Swami, and he's in India teaching their courses. But in any case, when he was still here, before he was a monk, he came to the yoga form once, some years back. And when I talked to him about their course, he said, yeah, we didn't do meditation for a while. And I hadn't studied this yet, so I didn't understand. Oh, that's the most important thing, first thing in the morning, the meditation, this. Because first they did this for some time, then they started, then there's something to the meditator according to the system. That's why it's done like that in Vedanta. So like this. So that's the Nididhyasanam. So the Shravanam is the main part we do here in the class. And then Mananam, meaning, you know, what happens literally is this one is the student's job. Of course, this one also is student job. You have to come, you have to see, you have to be attentive. And actually, I can be, if I'm Shravanam, doesn't mean what he's saying, yes, yes, oh, yes, 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 oh, yes, like this. And it's not also if I fight against it. No, that can't be. It also doesn't work. I listen, let it go, record, and then afterwards I churn it. Because if I am just, you know, okay, whatever the guru said, okay, whatever, I'm not using my mind, I have to use my intellect. And if I fight against, also it also doesn't help because I have to, information here, then I have to churn it and everything. So, but this is, you know, more passive, you can say, but this one is totally individual, somebody has to do. Nobody can do it for you. Nobody can reflect on it for you. One has to do. That's why, you know, for myself, I found that taking notes is very helpful because then I read it, and I try to understand, and then the questions can come because otherwise, how will I retain what was said? I won't be able, you know, like this. That's why, you know, not everything has to read down, but important points like this that I very much recommend, like this. So that one is really, you know, one has to be involved, one has to do. And in class we'll get a little opportunity, some questions at the end of each session, we'll have some time for it like this. Let me see if any other point is very pertinent I want to still touch on today before, like this, those are the most important things I think pretty much I'd cover. So, this course, we're having six classes now, which, as I said, we're going to give some of the main points overview here. It is, we can't go in very much depth because of the time. As it says, some people came late, so I'll just reiterate. Once the 6 weeks are over this, if people want to keep going and studying, we can continue, no problem. We can, you know, much as I can give, because, you know, I have my limitation in how much I've studied and known, but we can continue like that, no problem. Then, you know, as long as it's interest. And the Vedanta study in this, it's something that is never done for a fee, that is never acceptable. So your donations for this, you know, running this wonderful place, it's doing such great service and for all of us and this, that's what it's for. For this type of thing, usually what's done, we're not going to do here, we're not necessary here, but usually what's done is if somebody teaches, okay, once in a while somebody gives donations, something like this, that's acceptable like this, but it's never done for a fee for something because it also wouldn't work the same. It's just not possible. It has to just be given. So in all Vedanta schools, it's never, you know, traditional ones, you know, it's never for that. Maybe they have a course and you pay because you stay there, they have to feed you, they have electric bills. So this place has that same thing too, but for teaching itself, it can't, but that's something that, it's not done. It's not the way to do it. What happens also with the course, we did say it's possible to remote in. You know, if you really can't make it in person, have to do that, do it. You have to let me know so that I'll see whether we use Skype or Zoom like this, that so we connect you with it. But I very much recommend, do your best to be here in person. It's, you know, that's second, you know, second if you can't, but if you're in person, it's very different. Much, much, much better to be in person. If you have to do it remote, you do. Just, you know, once you're on, you know. If I get Zoom, I know we can mute everyone. I can just mute her. Otherwise, you know, make sure you mute there. So, you know, if you're at home and phone rings or who knows. But also, if you're remoting, make sure you're in a place where you're not disturbed by other things. You don't get into other things. Or it's going to be harder for you also to focus in it like this. The book itself, there are two versions we have. The center has just a few of these right now. This one is with commentary by Swami Dayananda, who I had mentioned. He passed away a little more than a year ago. So here he gives much more elaborate commentary. So there are only a few at the center, but they can order more, I'm sure, or also so then you can get more then. This one I very highly recommend because you'll get a lot more in depth and in detail. So because each verse takes a lot more time to explain a lot of things around it. So I very much recommend. It has Sanskrit, and most of the Sanskrit words, they're always written in English letters as well. And when he writes in the sentences, also he translates. If it comes where there's a place where he didn't explain the word of this, just come ask him in the class or email me, and then, you know, I can explain. So like that. This one, the center ordered, but they're not here yet, but we hope to have them soon. This one is much shorter, so you can also get this one if you wanted. This one is from Chinmaya Mission, who I'd mentioned. And so it's, you know, gives some commentary, much shorter. So it's also good, but this one's more elaborate like this. In the class itself, you know, you can bring, what I recommend on the class is, from my experience, there's commentaries. If you start getting caught up with the commentary, it won't be exactly what's here, so leave reading commentary for later, because otherwise your mind is trying to do two tracks and it'll be very difficult. I know for myself, I've tried that, I personally don't do it because I see it takes my attention away. Any other points?
So we don't have to buy these books to get to, I mean, come to class?
Yeah, I very much recommend you get, so this one they don't have yet, hopefully by next week. If they don't have, then I have something that's even less, no commentary, that I'll just has the verses, I'll just photocopy so people can have. So by next week we'll have something here, yeah. This one they have a few copies here, and if it runs out, they'll get more. So this one, this is actually from the center here. So I think that covers pretty much everything. Anybody have any technical questions about any of the things, or...
I have a technical question, but a friend of mine who was into Vedanta when I was a kid said one of the points that you had written on previously, and I didn't bring a notebook, so I don't even know what the word is now.
No problem.
But you used the term Maya in terms of illusion, or what you wrote as sort of the veil.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to how that fits in with this, or whether there's another, just another nomenclature.
But give it some, wait, just wait.
Okay? I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, because what happens is there's so many things to we can cover, and we'll cover it. Of course, that is one of the top, it will be discussed, yeah, that will be discussed. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you, if we're able to get one of those books, is there anything that you recommend that we read?
No, for this week, not now. What the reason, you could read some of it if you want, not any harm. But what I'll do is what we cover afterwards, I'll say, okay. Because preparing with what he said before doesn't necessarily really help.
Okay.
That's what I found. So that's why I don't, next week I'll say yes, you know, these verses, this part of the book I recommend. You can read like this, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good. So any last questions before we finish for today? So again, thanks a lot for coming. I look forward to spending some time with you with this. And I'll tell you, literally, you know, I've most of my life, so since I did our yoga teacher training course, 1989. So since then, I've been doing yoga and meditation thing regularly. I'm sure it was a good preparation for this. Actually, one thing I'll tell you about the preparation. I know I've been told so much our Vedanta teacher says, and I know for a fact on myself too. The Vedanta, we never, until we've really done house cleaning, we can't really get to the bottom of it. There's no doubt. Again, it doesn't mean we don't study in this, because as you study, it helps you also to understand how important to clean house. So so it's not that we shouldn't study like this, but I know for a fact, I know what I haven't cleaned house inside gets in the way for it. There's no doubt. But studying this, it's something I haven't seen anything more valuable that I've done in life, literally. Of course, you know, coming to spiritual practice has opened the door to it, otherwise I wouldn't have gone to it. Without having met my Buddha and all this, it wouldn't have. But this is really a valuable thing. So what I suggest, do it for some time. You know, we have the sixth class that we continue. Do it for a few months, half a year, this regularly. Then you decide. Because really it's something that is very unique. I have not seen, you know, I haven't seen everything in the world, so I can't tell you. But it is something very unique that there is. You cannot find something like this in most things in the world. Literally, it's something that is really goes to the depth. I personally can't say it's gotten me to the bottom of it, but I'm sure it can. Somebody who's sincere and properly studies in this, I'm sure it can. Like this is what I'd say about it.
So I just want to clarify, these two books are the same thing?
It's the same one with different commentaries. One is terse and one is much more elaborate. Somebody who's really serious about gets both, and reads both. It doesn't hurt at all. Two different people wrote the commentaries. Some will be very similar, some will have slight different nuances. So like that. So, if you really don't have time to read in this, get the smaller one. Like that, either way. But at least get one of them, if you want both of them. Very good. So let's say a small prayer to conclude them for today. Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Sadguru Shri Shivananda Maharaj Ki Jai Sadguru Shri Vishnu Devananda Maharaj Ki Jai